Okay, thank you everyone for coming. So it's been 5 years, and I just want to say that the pasuk says in Tehillim, "Al titosh Torah simecha." Someone should not abandon the Torah of their mother, your mother. And I think I was thinking over, and I realized that there's something. I realized a new meaning to that term of Torah simecha, which is that my mother's Aleha Shalom's Torah has something in common to the Torah which we all learn. And that is that anyone who's had the experience of learning Torah knows that you could do the same exact thing. You could learn the same Parsha, Gemara, Halacha, story, and each time you see it with fresh eyes, you always learn something new. And that's the way of the Torah is, the depth and the wisdom in the Torah, that there's infinite depth and wisdom. And each new look that you have to the Torah, you get new insights. And, you know, every year when I start preparing for this year, sometimes I think, what am I going to talk about? Last year I went through the whole letter and all different things, and always, what am I going to talk about this year? But I really see the Torah simecha is that the depth and the wisdom, the insights that my mother, Aleha Shalom, had, are really an endless source of wisdom. And there's always something more to be able to be gained. And with that in mind, I started thinking of a shiur that I was going to give about Rosh Chodesh and that whole thing, and I wasn't quite sure how I was going to connect it. I was just kind of thinking over the ideas. And then sure enough, after I worked out a whole thing, which I thought it was nice, I hope to share with you, then sure enough, I looked back at the letter which I have hanging on my wall, and sure enough, it was right there in the letter, the insight which I'd like to share today. So we'll start with the shir and the ideas, and then we'll connect it back to my mother. So the topic is about Rosh Chodesh, the Rosh Chodesh woman. Okay? So perhaps there's brought down, and I'm curious what you guys know or don't know about this minhag, because I haven't heard of it, but I assume women maybe heard of it more than I did. But there's a minhag brought down that women on Rosh Chodesh do not do malacha. Okay, does anyone? Yes?
Yeah.
True? Seven. People do this?
Yeah, of course. Yeah?
Yeah?
Anytime I can not do malacha. Huh? Right on
that. You've heard of it?
Oh, definitely.
You do that?
Is
that
yeah. I mean, do I do it?
Yeah. Do people do it? I'm saying.
Personal. No,
I'm saying.
I mean,
well,
right. It's different things. Like they don't sew, they don't iron,
right.
You don't sew or iron. Okay.
Just on
okay, just on our slow dash. Okay. Okay.
Or comes out on Shabbos, it's a problem.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so, you know, it was news to me. I just read about it, and I'm like, oh, I guess we don't do this nowadays. So, I guess some people do it nowadays, some people don't do it nowadays, but it's kind of. There is a minhag out there like that. It is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch. It says depends on what the minhag is, but it has early sources. Okay, so I came across it. So I'd like to understand, what is that idea? What kind of minhag? Not do malacha on Rosh Chodesh?
So you're talking about lam etes
malacha? It's not clear exactly. I mean, some say it's all malacha, some say it's certain malachas. There's different minhagim about it. And I don't think anyone actually keeps it like Shabbos or Yom Tov. So there's different. You know, but it's not very rich in the literature what exactly it's referring to. But that there is such a thing as a minhag of women to not do malacha on Rosh Chodesh is there.
Well, maybe it's particularly what women would normally do.
So that's a good explanation. Yeah. So the question is, what kind of idea is it altogether? What is Rosh Chodesh? Why women? Why not men? Why not doing malacha? There's no Rosh Malacha in the Torah on Rosh Chodesh. The whole thing is it sounds strange. If you haven't heard of it before, like I did when I saw this, it sounds strange. Okay. So it comes from I came across it actually. It comes up in the Gemara. It's brought down in Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar, whatever. But the context which it comes down is that on days where there is bitul malacha, where people, there's some sort of prohibition against malacha, then in laning in shul, we lane extra aliyahs. Okay, so to whatever degree you're familiar or not familiar, on typical Monday or Thursday in shul, when they lane 3 aliyahs. Okay, and then 3 people go up and read from the Torah. on, and there's this ascending sequence of days. On Rosh Chodesh, on Chol Hamoed, it's 4 liyas, on Yom Tov it's 5, on Yom Kippur it's 6, on Shabbos it's 7. And the idea is that the greater the is the prohibition, or when there's an isra of malacha, some sort of a prohibition or cessation of malacha, then I think the idea is we don't just not work, but we dedicate our time towards learning Torah and towards growth. It's not just a day of free vacation, but the idea of our vacations are always tied in with our personal growth. So one of the days, as it says, days which have a lack of malacha or bitul malacha, like Chol Hamoed and Rosh Chodesh. So Chol Hamoed, we understand, Chol Hamoed, you're not supposed to do work unless it's Devar Avid, unless it's important. There's all different halachas about work in Chol Hamoed, but what about Rosh Chodesh? So Rashi brings down that on Rosh Chodesh also, he says, Ein ha-noshim osos b'hem malacha. Okay, women don't do malacha. Why? So he says, he quotes here this Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar. It says, Shamu ha-noshim. So it's talking about by the Chet Ha'egel. Okay? And the Chet Ha'egel connects to, yesterday, for the Shavas of Batamas, was when Moshe broke the Luchos. So it says, by the Chet Ha'egel, it says, Shamu ha-noshim. The women heard, V'lo ratzu liten nizmeim l'ba'alehem. They didn't want to give their earrings, their nose rings to their husbands. Because the Torah says, Aaron, in an attempt to get the Jews not to do the Chet Ha'egel, he told them, Ayom Alehem Aaron, Parku nizme ha'zahav asher b'aznei neshechem, b'nechem v'noseichem, v'viva, like, remove the earrings from your son, your children, and your daughters, and your wives, right? And give them to me, and I'm going to use them to make this egel. And Rashi tells Aaron thought that the women and the children are going to be very attached to their jewelry, and it will cause a delay. They're not going to want to give it up. And before you know it, Moshe Rabbeinu is going to come down from the mountain, and everything's going to be safe. Nothing bad is going to happen. Right? Sounds like a good plan. But then, if you look in the pasuk, it says, "Vayis paraku kol ha'am es nizme hazahav asher be'aznei ham." It says, they all removed, the nation removed their earrings from their own ears. It doesn't say from their wives or from their children's ears, it's from their own ears. So Rashi, on the spot, he says, V'heim lohim tinu. It says, the men didn't wait. Uparku me'al atzmam. The men took it off of themselves, off of their own ears. I guess this was the fashion back in the day. Okay, so that's what Rashi brings down. But this Pirkei of the Rabbi Elazar tells the story in more depth. Why did the men not do as Aaron suggested to get it from their wives? So then this is what he's quoting Rashi. Shamon Ashen, the women heard this. V'lo ratzu liten his mamel v'aleihem. They didn't want to give their earrings to their husbands. Ela amru lahem. They said, Atem rotzim lasos pesel maseicha. You guys want to make a graven image, an idol? Shein ba koach lahatzil. Right? Who doesn't have any power to save us? No way. We're not going to do it. We're not interested in this plan. Right? And so therefore, because of that, the men had to use their own. The women refused to participate in giving over their earrings. V'nasan HaKadosh Baruch Hu scharan shel nashim v'olam hazeh. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave women schar in this world. What's the schar? Okay, sounds like a great deed. What's their schar? Sheyu mishamro soshech hadashim yoser min ha'anashim. That they're going to get to keep Rosh Chodesh more than men. Right? Sounds good. Ulolam haba, and don't worry, there's another schar also. Ulolam haba, heina sidin l'hischadesh, kemo Rosh Chodeshim. They're going to become renewed like Rosh Chodesh. Okay, and he quotes a pasuk. Okay, so that's the origin. Okay, as far as I can tell, this is the origin of why women don't do malacha on Rosh Chodesh, because the women didn't give their earrings, and therefore the Chet Ha'egel, they refused, because that their schar is that they get to keep an isur malacha or something on Rosh Chodesh, and then they get something in Olam Haba as well. They'll be renewed in Olam Haba. Okay, so any questions? Can you want to enunciate a question? Or is... Yeah? Questions are obvious, right? What's the connection between this and Rosh Chodesh, right? That's one thing. What's the Chet Ha'egel there for Rosh Chodesh, right? Well, you have a lot of schar as you can think of that. There's seemingly no connection, right? And then, also, why is that a schar? Is that a reward? So you get to have a prohibition of sewing or whatever on Rosh Chodesh. That's the best. And it's nice the Olam Haba thing. That's good, but it's fine. Just to give to the Olam Haba and let the men not do the work on, right? What's the, right? On the surface, it's baffling. Okay? Maybe this is why it didn't catch on so well. But, you know, but I think it did. Again, I think nowadays it doesn't, but it seems like it did. And, you know. All right. So how should we approach this? Anyone have any thoughts? Any ideas? Okay, so let's think. I think, what do we have to think about? Maybe we should talk about that. What do we have to think about in order to try to work towards getting an answer? If you're trying to, you know, trying to solve this, trying to approach this area, what do you think would be a wise area to direct yourself towards to try to? Sometimes it's hard to just get an answer, but if we start asking questions in a certain area, anyone have any idea what we should think about? Okay, good. That's one thing. What's Rosh Chodesh about? Right? What's Rosh Chodesh about? If we get some idea of what Rosh Chodesh is about, what might be a value to not doing the melacha on Rosh Chodesh, that might be helpful, right? Okay, good. And what else might be good to think about?
The golden calf.
What? The golden calf. Yeah, right. There's some connection here. Again, this is obvious, but sometimes it's helpful to state the obvious. And again, if... Hit the mute, please.
Sounds like my dad, right?
Can someone hit the mute, please? Whoever just came on is in a car or something.
Can't you mute it?
If I mute myself, then no one's gonna hear me. Yeah. Okay. So hopefully it'll catch on soon. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So right. So my point is that if we think a little bit about the Chet HaEgel, about what happened there, and about the giving of their gold. And then if we think a little bit about Rosh Chodesh and the idea of not doing melacha on Rosh Chodesh, and somehow we think about each of them and then somehow look for something in common, right? That might be an approach to do it, right? But just to sit back and think, oh, what's that idea? It's hard. So let's think a little bit about... So it came to mind, I was thinking about this problem, and it came to mind some sources that were related to the Chet HaEgel, some sources that were related to Rosh Chodesh, and maybe slowly we'll try to work our way towards unraveling this statement. Okay, fine. So when it came to the Chet HaEgel, okay, so it came to mind is a Rashi in the Torah, and it's a Gemara in Brachos. And in the beginning of Parshas Devarim, the first pasuk or two in Devarim, they're very cryptic. And one of the things that Moshe spoke to the Jewish people about is he said, "Di Zahav." Okay, the different places. Eila Devarim Asher Diber Moshe El Kol Yisrael. These are the words that Moshe spoke. Be'Ever Hayardein, Ba'Midbar, Ba'Rava, Mol Suth, Be'in Paron, Be'in Tofel, Ba'Lavam, Ba'Chatzeros, Ve'Di Zahav. These are a list of many places what Moshe Rabbeinu is referencing. It's strange. It's not clear what it's talking about, but Rashi fills in. He's referencing different points of Musar, which he's giving to the Jewish people. Okay, and each one of these places brings to mind a different location where the Jews sinned. And he's subtly conveying to them words of Musar. Okay, so what's Dizav? So it says, Hilchichon al ha'egel. He rebuked them about the egel. She'asu b'shvil rov zahav shahayalah. Because they made the egel because they had so much gold. Shenamar v'kesef hirbesila v'zahuv asulabal, and they had a lot of. Hashem gave them a lot of gold, a lot of silver, and the zahav they made for Baal. And that's a pasuk in Hosea. And the Gemara in Brachos elaborates on it that actually Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, he like trying to defend Klal Yisrael. He said, "Ribono shel olam," this is his tefillah. B'shvil kesef izav she'ashpat alam Yisrael ad she'amru dai, because you gave them so much gold and silver that they said enough already, we have so much. Hu garam she'asu egel, that's what caused them to do the egel. So to speak, it's your fault, Hashem, you gave them so much gold and silver and that's what caused them to do the egel. Right? Okay? So where did he give them the gold and silver? It was from Mitzrayim, right? They took the spoils of Mitzrayim. They took all the jewels and treasures, and then Vayamsef, they took the spoils of Mitzrayim. There's tons and tons of gold and silver there, which they took. So much so that they said enough. So Moshe Rabbeinu is somehow blaming or defending Klal Yisrael, if you will, saying, you gave them so much gold and silver, what do you expect of them? Right? So how do we understand that? Isn't that a strange type of, you shouldn't have given them so much gold and silver? So what do you make of that? Or how does getting too much gold and silver make you make an ego?
It doesn't.
Okay.
You were so good to them, you spoiled them, so okay. Now they're struggling with
okay.
Patience and waiting.
Okay. Okay, good. So does it connect? Can we connect it to the gold and silver itself? Because it's the egel was from the gold and silver, right? So what you're saying is good, but maybe what is the gold and silver? Because the gold is the egel hazav, right? Mm-hmm. So di zahav is the egel hazav. So how could we... Why does giving that... Obviously, you made the egel out of gold, right? But whatever. So they could always find some gold. But how does the fact that you're giving them so much gold... Now, of course, they're going to make an egel. Is that... Yeah?
They thought maybe that's what they were supposed to do.
Okay, but they didn't know they're part of the Ten Commandments. Don't make idols. Yeah. So
the pasuk said it was Aaron who was the initiator.
Yeah. Yes.
So it had nothing to do with
okay.
anything other than that. It was just accessible.
Okay.
And
okay.
There was an abundance of it.
Okay. Good.
So it was practical.
Yes. You know? It's true.
Why would you blame God?
Yeah. Right. True. True. Okay, good. Sippy, you were going to say something?
I was going to say that maybe it's just they had so much gold that it didn't take them enough time to collect it. Like, normally you'd have to take some time to collect enough gold to make a big idol. But it was just everywhere.
Oh, everywhere.
Like, the men's urines.
Okay, we're all over the place. Okay, good. Okay.
Well, also wasn't valuable to them.
Okay, you mean they were ready to drop to give it up because of the fact they had so much of it. Okay, good. Right, there's always more. Okay, good. That's a good point. Okay. Is it good to give a person a lot of gold?
I ask anyway.
Are you speaking
as a woman? I'm just asking a question.
And the woman didn't really want to give it up because they wanted to keep it for themselves.
That's right. It's true. Right, Hashem gave us lots of gold, right? So is that good? Moshe Rabbeinu seems to be blaming Hashem or whatever, but what do you think the answer should be to that question? Is it good to give a person a lot of gold? What do you think would be a good answer that's going to help us
neither.
Start thinking? What?
Neither.
Neither. Good. Or both. It depends. It depends. It could be good. It could be bad, right? That sounds like a reasonable approach, right? Hashem did it, presumably for our good. We misused it. And it ended up for our bad, right? Okay, so could we explain that a little bit? Why would it be good? And then why would it, in what way is it bad? Why would it be good? Why did Hashem give us so much gold and silver? Well, who needs all that? Right? Why is that good?
Isn't it possible they thought they were supposed to use it for this?
Okay. For the Chet Egel?
Well, Aaron was involved. Like, he did give us directly. Like, part of the reason God gave them such an abundance is because they were supposed to just sort of redirect it back.
Okay, I'm assuming that was they were punished as a terrible avera that everyone knew it wasn't the proper thing to do. And even though Aaron led them in that path, but I'm assuming given that it's a terrible avera that was not.
I think it's a terrible avera, but it also sounds a little bit like they just sort of got caught up in it.
Yes, caught up in it. Agreed. Okay, so why is it good? Someone was saying, someone said he used it for the Mishkan, that was a good thought, right? We could use the gold and silver for the Mishkan, yeah?
Also, in all of them traveling through the desert, it may have been, like, advantageous to be wealthy because they pay off certain situations.
Okay.
Travel through certain lands.
Okay, good.
They may need a ball to...
Okay, good. Okay, good. Good thought.
Also, they had, like, that slave mentality.
Yeah. Okay,
so
good.
I feel like they, it maybe like was able to like remove them from feeling like the underdog
right.
with the Egyptians.
Yeah.
Like, they were,
right.
they finally get to have... like empowered with mm-hmm. their wealth.
Yeah, good.
Also promised to them.
Yeah, so he was promised to them, exactly. Back all the way by Abraham. Exactly. It's part of the initial thing. You're going to be slaves, but you're not going to be slaves. You're going to go out with an abundance of wealth. And part of the thing was breaking their slave mentality. The slavery was a short-term necessity for whatever reason, but ultimately Klal Yisrael went out Berchush Gadol. As a great, strong, powerful, wealthy nation, and we had to raise our heads up and go free in the with great wealth, to be able to allow us to emerge as a great nation and not just to be permanently, eternally slaves.
So that's what Moshe's saying.
He gave it to us more than even enough. It was part of the feeling to build us up, and that was important and it was necessary. And it was good for us. But it somehow got to our head, right? We became too attached to it in a negative way. We became attached to, like, if a person is totally thinks everything is gold and silver and wealth, you can imagine a person who the whole world is gold and silver, the physical and the beauty and all the grandeur could become the center of a person's life. And that's not good for us. What's good for us is to transcend the physical, to transcend all the grandeur, to recognize it as a vehicle, as a tool to be able to approach the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And the gold could be a great tool to rise us up out of our slavery and to make us a great nation. Great not because of our gold and silver, but because of the Torah, our ability to serve God. But we became attached to the physical, and we needed a physical God. The gold became the center of our lives. We became fixated upon the physical, concrete realities. And when Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't there, we became needy. And we took our gold and silver as being like our ultimate source of security. And then we crafted a God that was made out of this gold and silver. So the gold and silver was supposed to be to help elevate us, but at the same time it was a double-edged sword. It ended up bringing us down. And Moshe Rabbeinu's argument to Hashem is, it was, so to speak, you set them up. You did, it was a good idea, but after all, in a certain sense, if you imagine giving a person millions and millions and millions of dollars, they're going to end up making mistakes and doing stupid things with that money. So yes, it could have been great, but at the same time, it's like a tefillah, a request to Hashem that, not that you shouldn't have done it, not blaming God, but in a certain sense, how could you blame them? They could have risen up, but you put them in a situation which is very difficult. And they fell, but at the same time, it's a zechus, it's a tefillah, asking Hashem for rachamim. They got themselves into a situation that they couldn't handle. Yes, they erred, but at the same time, you could trace their error to the gold and silver which Hashem gave them. They took their gold and silver and used it to make money. Okay? We good? Now, let's look at, now again, who did this? This was the men, right? This was the men, this was not the women. The women, arguably, had the proper, they recognized the gold and silver for the sake of becoming a great nation, who are servants of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they said, we're going to use the gold for a masecha, are you crazy? There's no way, we're not doing it, we're not interested, right? So that they related to the gold properly. They didn't fall prey to the negative influence of the gold. On the contrary, they grabbed hold of it and related to it in the proper manner. Yes?
Well, I heard it more as, forget how they relate to the gold, they're just relating to God more appropriately.
Okay.
And like, we're not supposed to be making all these great images, they just didn't want to be involved in the Avodah Zarah.
Yes, that's true, but given that it's the gold, at least the way this Rashi is developing, is the gold is what got them. Of course, what you're saying is also true, but it sounds like the appeal of the gold didn't corrupt them as it did the men. Their attachment to the gold didn't corrupt them as it did the men. Yes, they also didn't do it for the Tzara.
Well, it's funny, because Aaron thought they were going to be more attached to the gold than more slaves.
Yes,
so
it's
true. Like they were rooted in that. Yeah. But maybe, Aaron seemed to be saying that the women will be more in line with attached to relate to gold properly than really the men were.
It seems like Aaron thought men, women, could be normally, emotionally, maybe women would have more of an attachment to it. But they were tzadkanios, and more important than the natural emotional proclivity is your zchus and your decision and your bechira. And the woman chose to rise above that, and the men didn't. So it sounds Aaron just kind of was going with a natural emotional thing, but women overcame that, and they, on the contrary, there was a great zchus for them. Okay. So now let us think a little bit about Rosh Chodesh. Okay. So, when I was thinking about Rosh Chodesh, it brought to my mind a part of where the Rambam talks about Rosh Chodesh and about certain details of the Karbanos on Rosh Chodesh, and then it kind of got me thinking about some connections here. So let me fill you. What is it? Maybe let me start with this. What is Rosh Chodesh centered around?
The moon.
The moon. Exactly, the moon, right? When we have a new moon, that's when the Bezdin sees Rosh Chodesh, they declare Mekudesh Mekudesh, we have a celebrate Rosh Chodesh, right? It's all about the new moon. Okay. Now, the Rambam says as follows. Okay, I'm going to skip a little bit, I'm going to jump around a little bit. But he starts like this. I'll call, I'm reading the English, this is, I forget what chapter it is. It's in the Marne Buchan. I forget the chapter. Okay, I'm sorry, page 365 in the Freelander edition. I'll call here your attention to a very remarkable thing, although it does not seem at first thought to belong to our subject. Okay. It is only the goat brought on the new moon as a sin offering, as a chatas, that the law calls a sin offering unto the Lord. The Torah says, if you look, I'm going to skip the details here, but it says a chatas l'Hashem. Many times the Torah tells us about different types of karbanos throughout this week's parsha, actually, is what he's referring to in Pinchas. But throughout the Torah, there are many times the Torah tells us about different karbanos. And there are different types of karbanos. The details are not that important for now, but there's a karban ola, which is entirely burned. And since it's entirely burned, the Torah says, Olo l'Hashem, Reach Nechach l'Hashem. It always says l'Hashem. But a chatas, the karban chatas, is for a sin offering, is some of it is eaten by Kohanim. And a shlamim, which is also brought, not for a sin offering, but different on Yom Tovim, or as karban hotoda, also some of it is eaten by the Kohanim, and some of it is eaten by the owner of the karban. And you'll never find, the Rambam is saying, if you look through the whole Torah, you'll find by ola, the Torah says l'Hashem, and when it comes to chatas, when it comes to shlamim, which are eaten by man, it doesn't say l'Hashem. It never says chatas l'Hashem, it never says shlamim l'Hashem, because it's not totally l'Hashem. After all, part of it is eaten by man. And he says there's one exception, which is on Rosh Chodesh. By the Rosh Chodesh, the karban chatas, which is the karban chatas, and part of it is eaten by the Kohanim, the Torah says chatas l'Hashem. And that's what the Rambam noticed from his perusal of the Torah, and he's trying to explain that. Okay, so I'm going to skip that's what he just says, and then he says as follows. Okay. But, okay, so it is therefore impossible that the goats which are eaten by the priest and not entirely burned should be called sin offerings unto the Lord. According to the normal rule, it shouldn't be called that. But as it was found that the kid offered on the new moon might be mistaken as an offering brought to the moon in the manner of the Egyptians who sacrificed to the moon on the days of the new moon, it was distinctly stated that this goat is offered in obedience to God's command and not in honor of the moon. This fear did not apply by the sin offerings of the festivals, nor to any of the on Yontif, nor to any other sin offering, because they were not offered on days of the new moon, or on any other day marked out by nature, but on such days as were selected by the divine will. Yom Tovim are always tied with the date Hashem chose. There's no astronomical event which sets up a Yontif. It's based upon Hashem's decree. Not so on the days of the new moon. They are not fixed by the law, but by nature. On the new moon, the idolaters sacrificed to the moon in the same manner as they sacrificed to the sun when it rose and set in certain particular degrees. This is described in the works mentioned above. On this account, the extraordinary phrase, a sin offering unto the Lord, is exceptionally introduced in reference to the goat brought on the new moon in order to remove the idolatrous ideas that were still lingering in their sorely diseased hearts. Note this exception likewise. Okay. So, you might ask, so why do this whole thing on Rosh Chodesh altogether? He's kind of saying, although the Yom Tov, it's not on any day which has any astronomical significance, so therefore you don't have to correct it, right? But on Rosh Chodesh, after all, this is a day where the idolaters used to, the Egyptians, the Jews who were living in Mitzrayim and were also idolaters, they would have sacrifices to the new moon, right? And therefore, the Torah wants to go out of the way specifically to redirect them and to say, no. It's not what's going on. It's a chatas l'Hashem. And it changed the normal verbiage, which is not really appropriate, in order to make sure that this idea is clear. So you could ask, so then don't do it on Rosh Chodesh. Don't create the problem. Don't do it on the same day as the holiday as they did it. And then you don't have to worry about this problem. Right? So why is it, it's like doing it on Rosh Chodesh, but then it's correcting it by saying chatas l'Hashem. Right? So what do you think? Why is that? What could we learn from this? Why is this? It's not a very strong question I'm asking, but let's say, I'd ask, why just don't make Rosh Chodesh altogether? Why make it on a day which the idolaters worship? Make your holidays on different days, which are not, like all the other Yom Tov.
That's not how you set up your system, like...
Okay. Okay, that's why it's not such a strong question. Mm-hmm. Right. So you could just say, look, whatever. Hashem wants it to be Rosh Chodesh, right? Okay. Anyone else want to... So maybe it's deliberate. This is part of the way of the Torah, is that the Torah recognizes the pitfalls of human beings. It recognizes the fact that idolaters worship the new moon. And it recognizes that gold could be corrupting. And it recognizes there are a lot of pitfalls in life. And the Torah doesn't just avoid them. What the Torah often does is it redirects us. It takes the moon. The new moon could be a source of great mistakes, great errors, idolaters, and even the moon does have, the Torah even tells us a few times that lest you'll look up to the sky and you'll see the moon and the sun and the stars and you'll bow down to them. There have been, throughout history, religions built around the moon. And the moon is a force which is involved in the tides. Nowadays, I saw the Sefer Chinuch says there were many different things which, at least, I don't know how much of it is true nowadays, but they thought scientifically all the planting seasons were built around the moon and navigation was built around the moon. There's a lot of things built around the moon. And it's within man's nature to fall prey to a type of a worship around the moon. When you see the new moon, to pray to the moon, to make a holiday to the moon. But the Torah didn't just avoid that tendency. It's a tendency in man. What did it do? It set up Chatas L'Hashem. It took the day of the new moon, which could be a man's downfall. And on the contrary, it made it, it elevated it. How did it elevate it? How do we relate to the new moon? If not as an object of worship, how do we relate to the new moon? What is the Torah's attitude about the new moon? Other than saying, hey, it's Rosh Chodesh.
Hashem's creation.
Good. Good. Can anyone think of anything which points to the way we relate to the new moon? Not sure.
Kiddush
Levana. Yes, Kiddush Levana. So when we see the new moon, okay, and some women do this, some women don't do it, but there's the Kiddush Levana, there's a bracha, which the Gemara compares, and Rambam brings down, it's compared to Mekabalas Pnei Hashchina. A person has to stand up when they say Kiddush Levana. When you see the new moon, some say you wait till a certain day, till 3 days, till 7 days, whatever, but when you see the new moon, there's a bracha, we say. And what does the bracha talk about? Anyone know?
Okay.
What's that? Nature. Okay, so I have here, I'll just translate from the art scroll. It said, blessed are you, Hashem, our God, King of the heavens, who with his utterance created the heavens, and with the breath of his mouth and all their legion. A decree and a schedule did he give them, that they not alter their assigned task. They are joyous and glad to perform the will of the Creator, the worker of truth whose work is truth. Okay, and so on and so forth. The idea is that we talk about the moon is a testament to the chachma of Hashem and the creation. The cyclic, the chokuzman which he gave it, the cyclic laws which he set up. The greatest wisdom is found in studying the universe, like I think Rashi interprets as Shemayim Misaprim Kavod Gel, U'maseyadav Magid Harakiyah. The heavens tell the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. According to Rashi, doesn't mean they talk. It means anyone who looks at the heavens sees the greatest wisdom. And cosmology and studying the stars is the source of the greatest wisdom. All scientific quests start by expanding our boundaries, looking beyond the physical earth, looking up to the skies and the heavens. And when we see the moon, the cyclic, the order points to chachma and to the lawfulness of Hashem's creation. And on the contrary, we celebrate Rosh Chodesh because it reminds us of the chokuzman nasan lahem, of the great wisdom which Hashem implanted into the laws of nature. And when we say, we stand up and we say this bracha, it's compared to being mekabel pnei Hashchina, because we're appreciating the great wisdom which Hashem put into the creation. And instead of, as idolaters do, worshipping the moon and uttering different types of prayers towards the moon, on the contrary, we have a chatas l'Hashem. And the Torah knows that it was like that the Jews were steeped in the idolatry of Mitzrayim. But the Torah directed us on a different path, away from the idolatry towards the appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the source of the moon and of the great wisdom which it reflects. Okay? So, can we connect some dots now? Let's think back to our original question, right? Question, what's the connection between the Chet HaEgel and the women not falling prey to the temptation of the Chayda Ego and relating to it properly. And the schar, which we still have to understand, of being able to have a prohibition of malacha on Rosh Chodesh. Any thoughts?
They're reaffirming what they did at that time, and they're saying, okay, now I'm connecting with the Shekhinah, and this is what I did way back then, and so now I get...
Okay, good. Good. So why is it a schar?
Oh, rather than a prohibition?
Yeah, right.
I would like it if someone told me not to iron and do laundry and whatever.
Okay, good. I hear you.
So they're making life easier for you.
Okay, good.
You go further.
Yeah. Someone else go further. You got to start.
Taking away the mundane.
Okay, good.
Your chores.
Okay.
You know, so that your mind is set in a different direction.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Malach has the same idea of Shabbos. That's the whole idea of Shabbos, that you're refraining from work, reflecting on Hashem's work.
Okay, good. Good. Okay, good. Good. So how does that connect up with
It should be then the men have to do that, because they're the ones that, like, messed up.
All right. Okay, good. Yeah. Okay, good. Good point. So what do you answer that? Okay, I thought you were just giving a dig here, but...
for them just to scarf us.
It's funny because men are the ones who are the laning. That's the question they ask. Is that getting an extra aliyah because the women are doing it in Bitum Lacha, but the women aren't the ones who are going to shul here in the laning. So someone did a say from here that shows you that women also have to hear.
I was about to say that.
But that's not the typical interpretation. You know, but to some say
but
it's also...
I think the men would notice that the women aren't doing what they're
good.
Doing.
Okay,
you know, so it's different for them also, and they could reflect on what they didn't do and what we did do.
Yes, good. You mean the women are good role models for us men in this
there
regard?
You go.
Yes.
In every regard.
It's an added punishment for them that we're not working, because then they have more work to do.
That's right.
Well, let's not get carried away.
If you want, I could go out of the room and you guys can make all kinds of...
The laundry's going to wait till the next day. Don't think it won't.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. Okay, good. So, putting it together here. So, I think what we could glean from putting these two things together is that in the Torah... There's no, the items which we have, or the events which take place, are not good or bad in their own right. Okay? And this is the part I'm going to connect to my mother. But the goal could be a source of our downfall, or it could be a source of our elevation, of our ability to thrive as Avdei Hashem. For the men, they took the gold and they were corrupted by it, and they did the Chayda Egel. The women, on the contrary, they rose up. They didn't fall prey to it. Ultimately, they devoted their gold and silver to the Mishkan, as someone mentioned.
Wait, that was for the Kior, was it?
The Kior was the mirrors, the mirrors.
But the gold was used for, okay.
The gold was just in general. Yeah. The gold is tons of gold and silver in the Mishkan. But the Kior is that's an interesting in its own right. Similarly, the moon. The moon could be the source of man's great downfall. The new moon is associated with all types of pagan rituals and practices and all that, and that's what the Jews were accustomed to in Mitzrayim. On the contrary, you could take the same moon, which could be a source of idolatry, and use it as the greatest Kabbalah's Pnei Shechina, of the recognition of the great wisdom which Hashem has in the universe. Now, it could be when the Torah set up Rosh Chodesh, it knew Rosh Chodesh is a double-edged sword. There's a risk in Rosh Chodesh that mankind will relate to it improperly. Will take the, as mankind has for all the many generations, is look up to the moon and see the new moon and pray to it and all kinds of idolatrous practices. But the Torah set up Rosh Chodesh and directed us, Chantas L'Hashem, in a proper manner. And it could be that, again, we don't relate, it's hard for us to relate to this, just to start off, because no one worships the moon nowadays, as far as I'm sure on the internet there are people who do, but, you know, it's not, you know, but it's not, it doesn't call to us. But for many, you have to put yourself in the shoes of the millennia of people who did, were drawn in by these things. And the Torah was given at a time where this was commonplace. And it could be there's a value, and this is the women had this minhag, or were given this minhag, there's a value to taking time out of your ordinary routine on Rosh Chodesh, and reflecting on the Chachmas Hashem, reflecting on what the moon represents, the orderliness of the laws of nature, and being able to avoid the pitfall, the attraction of the idolatrous moon, and on the contrary, turn and be metalpanei shechina and recognize the moon as a source of great chachma. And the women were successful in a similar, parallel type of a challenge, with not with a moon, but with a gold. And the gold, just like the moon pulls on the primitive part of mankind, the gold also pulls on the primitive part of mankind. And the women were role models at that time of how to not get pulled in by the primitive draw of the gold, but on the contrary, to relate to the gold as a higher, as a vehicle of elevating themselves. And it could be because of the memory of the tzidkus of the women, they were appropriate vehicles to be role models of teaching this lesson to Klal Yisrael, of taking those items which could be used for the greatest evil, for idolatry, and on the contrary, towards recognizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the minhag, and as you said well, is that it's the men also could learn a lesson. It's not only for the women. The men have the women have a minhag because their tzidkus from the Chet HaEgel stands out as being a lesson of the proper perspective and the proper way to relate to these items which could draw us in a negative direction. And therefore, their model could serve as a way to inspire men to follow suit and to learn and to relate to Rosh Chodesh in a proper manner. Okay? So, turning back to my mother, Alei HaShalom, and her life, I think that there's two connections. Okay, the first connection is, this is from the letter which she had written. So, this is just the way she started. I am awed by watching the miraculous order of God's nature unfolding in my backyard. You can see throughout nature, a mother's job is to give her child wings, teach them to fly, and watch them soar. Each year I watch the swans hatch ugly ducklings, teach them to hunt for food, and when strong enough, teach them how to fly. Then they turn into beautiful swans and fly off to start their own lives. So it seems. Fortunately, children may leave the nest, but don't always leave the neighborhood, and I really have had this list to watch you all soar. So first of all, you see that in my mother's life, it wasn't the moon that she was looking at, but she lived near the water, and she took the opportunity of looking at the swans and appreciating God's wisdom and nature. This was something which she did. I don't know if she did on Rosh Chodesh, but the idea of, it's not something she talked about, whoever even knew this, but this is what she put down as her words of motherly advice, is that this is what she appreciated, the great wisdom in God's creation, and that's the lesson of Rosh Chodesh, of the moon, and seeing the Chachmas Hashem in the universe. But on a deeper level, I think there's something else in her letter which she really hammered home this point. And the point is, I'll read you the point and then I'll express it. It says, I hope you read this towards the end of the letter. As you hope, here she says, sometimes it's a matter of perspective on life and what's truly important to them. As I hope you realize, the point of all this is to simply say that I thank God every day because I am truly blessed with happiness, to be cliche, with Yiddish and Achas. Bumps in the road are just that and make me appreciate what I have more. Okay, that sentence I thought was especially telling. Bumps in the road are just that and make me appreciate what I have more. So her point in that is, she was writing this at a time before she was going for surgery. As anyone who knows anything about her life, she had a lot of bumps in the road. She had a lot of pain, illness. Whoever knows. But the point is, she had a lot of bumps in the road. But her perspective was, bumps in the road are just that and help me appreciate what I have more. Someone could have had the same life and said, everything which I have doesn't really matter that much because of all this pain and suffering I have. The same two things. She has a lot of good things in life, but she has pain and illness. She's looking at it as the bumps in the road help her appreciate all the good which she has. Again, someone could have the exact opposite, the same situation she has. What's the good of all the good things, all the nice things I have, but if I have pain all the time and I'm constantly in pain and I'm always running to the doctors and I'm always going to the hospital and surgeries, what's it worth? Right? I can't appreciate it all. So it's the same. The point is that, as she says, sometimes it's a matter of a person's perspective on life and what's truly important to them. The lesson we see from Rosh Chodesh, from the women of the time of the Chet HaEgel, and the woman's minhag of Rosh Chodesh, and embodied in my mother, is that the particular objects that we have in life, the particular situations that life throws our way, are not ultimately what makes our life and what determines whether we'll be happy, we'll have a good life. But it's about your perspective and how you relate to them. The same gold could be the source of the worst sin on the worst blemish on Klal Yisrael's record, or of the great tzchus that the woman be able to rise above it. The same moon could be the source of the worst idolatry, or the source of the great appreciation of Kabbalah from Yashchina. And the same Yisurin in life that my mother had, and that we all have in our own which way, could be a source of our being, like the Chazal says, to be bo'et b'yisurim, to be kicking yisurim, and to be complaining, and to be miserable, and to be just unhappy and feel bad about our lives. Or on the contrary, we could recognize them as bumps in the road that help us appreciate more of what we have. And I think that lesson is, again, a part, as I was saying before, it's a part of the letter which I didn't even appreciate or realize, but it's a great inspiration, I think, in my life and everyone's life. Is there are always challenges which we have, but the perspective that we have and being able to keep our eye focused upon what really matters and to use whatever it is to be able to help us in a positive way and to grow and to pursue a path of happiness, as the letter she titled, Some Thoughts on Happiness. And she was, as anyone who knows her knows, she was the most happy person. And I think this was a big part of that picture, was that she was able to truly have a proper perspective on the positive and the difficult things in life. Okay. Okay, thanks all for coming.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
You got it.